Chapter 34. It was during the second night in the cabin that he heard the little voices. They were not soldiers' voices. I'm going in this one. No, that one. That one's bigger. I'm tired. I'm stopping. You stupid meatball. It's right there. Another 2 seconds. I'm saying. Great, you beef jerky. Stay. I'm going on that one. Good night. Silence then. Hold on, I'm coming. That was all. The ghostly soldiers returned, their haunted eyes seeking warmth, food, life. There was no morning, only daylight in the doorway. He pushed himself up, dragged himself outside into the blinding light. The saltines lay in the brown, frozen grass. The next cabin was nearby. January slipped an icy finger under his collar and down his back. He pulled the blanket tighter about himself, but it was too late. The finger had touched the last warm coal in his hearth, and his body, fanning the ember, shook itself violently. He walked to the next cabin, looked inside, and saw a body huddled in the corner. An eye opened, stared at him. Then, in succession, three more eyes opened. The body divided and became two. Two little boys. Get a load of this meatball, said the one with a front tooth missing. He walks around with a blanket on. Hey, meatball, why'd you bring your mattress along too? And your pillow too, screeched the other. Then Missing Tooth whipped off his wooden cap and smacked Screecher in the face. Screecher retaliated, and Maniac had to step back while a two-kid tornado swirled around the cabin. When they finished, they rolled onto their backs, shook their legs at the ceilings, and laughed as long as they had fought. The volume coming from Screecher was incredible, as though a microphone was embedded in his throat. Finally, Missing Tooth rediscovered the stranger standing in the doorway. Hey, Meatball, you running away too? No, not really. Maniac replied. Well, we are, went Screecher. Where are you going? Maniac asked. The answer came from both. Mexico. Maniac bit back a grin. When they stood, he saw they couldn't have been more than 4 feet tall or 8 years old. Well, he said, it's good and warm down there, but it's pretty far, you know. Yeah, we know, growled Missing Tooth. You think we're meatballs like you? He grabbed a supermarket bag in the corner, opened it. Look! It was filled with candy, cupcakes, pies, even a pack of butterscotch crimpets. Maniac's stomach rasped against itself. He remembered how thirsty he was. Where'd you get all this? We stole it, Screecher blurted. The other smacked him with his cap. Shut up, Piper, you stupid sausage. You don't go telling people you stole stuff. Piper returned the cap slap. You shut up, Russell. I didn't tell him where we stole it. This time, the fight was over in less than a minute. But it started up again when Maniac asked where they were from. And Piper said, 2 mils. And Russell said, shut up. He might be a cop. And bopped him good. When they settled down, they stared at him warily. Piper snickered. He ain't no cop. He's a kid. Yes, sneered Russell. That's how much you know. They got cops that look like kids. That's how they catch kids. They stared at him some more. They moved in cautiously, one on either side. They opened his blanket. They patted him all over. What are you doing that for? Piper wanted to know. We're feeling for a gun, Russell explained. Oh? After the patting, they backed off. So, said Russell, you ain't a cop? Not me, said Maniac. He moved in from the doorway. And with only a moment's pause, the story came to him. A pizza delivery boy. We have a contest every week, and you two were chosen for a free pizza. The two gaped at each other. We were? Yep, a large. Where is it? Demanded Russell, glancing around. At Cobble's Corner. You have 24 hours to claim your prize. He waited while they blinked over what to, or bickered over what to do. Valley Forge was a good 5 or 6 miles from Two Mills. These kids might not have made it to Mexico, but they had come a long way and stayed out overnight, and someone somewhere must be worried sick about them. And he had a feeling they weren't kidding about stealing the food. He figured he'd better help them make up their minds. "You know," he said, "you're taking the long way to Mexico. If you come back to Two Mills with me, I'll show you a shortcut." That did it. Soon the three of them were trekking past the Washington Memorial Chapel, Russell and Piper with their bag, Maniac with his satchel. It was early afternoon when they walked into Cobble's Corner at Hector and Birch. Maniac produced his certificate for conquering Cobble's Knot, and 20 minutes later, the young runaways were attacking a large pizza with pepperoni. Maniac confined himself to 3 glasses of water and 6 crimpets. The boys agreed with Maniac that they ought to stay the night in their own house before setting out for Mexico in the morning. They were barely a block from Cobble's when Maniac heard a familiar voice. Bellowing and barreling down the street was a fearsome fastballer, King of the Cobras, Big John McNabb himself, and he was roaring mad. Maniac might have taken off, but he found himself clung to and clutched by the two little urchins. They huddled behind him like babies on a possum's back as Giant John came red-faced and huffing up to them. "Where you been?" he yelled. As Maniac considered what to say, the urchins peeped from behind him. "We wasn't no place, John. We was right here with this here kid, and he ain't no cop neither. We checked him out." For the first time, Giant John looked straight at Maniac. A smile crossed his face. "Well, well, the frog man." The smile vanished. "So what are you doing with my little brothers?" Chapter 35. It took a while for everything to get straightened out. First, Giant John had to be convinced that Maniac was not kidnapping his brothers. Then the brothers had to do some more trembling and clinging while John finished lambasting them for running away, which apparently they did about every other week. Then, when the brothers found out that their pizza person was none other than the famous Maniac McGee, the very same one who blasted their big brother's fastballs to smithereens and finished him off with a home run frog, well, it took a good 5 minutes of rolling on the sidewalk to get all the laughing out of their systems. Which, of course, got Giant John more than a little steamed. Prompting Maniac, who didn't like seeing John disgraced before his little brothers, to say, "Yeah, but didn't John tell you what happened the next day?" And the brothers said, "No, what?" And Giant John said, "Huh?" And Maniac winked at John and crossed his fingers. "Sure, John, you remember. Wink, wink. At the Little League field the next day. You said I was lucky that all you threw me were fastballs because you weren't ready to reveal your secret pitch. The one you'd been working on, remember? Wink." McNabb nodded dumbly. "And so I said, well, come on. I can hit anything. Pitch it to me. And you pitched it. And I missed it by a mile. And you kept pitching it to me all day long, and I never even hit a foul ball on it." "What was the pitch? What was the pitch?" chanted the urchins. "It was," Maniac paused for dramatic buildup, "the stop ball."
"The stop ball?"
"Yeah, you shouldn't have seen it." "Yeah, and you shouldn't have seen it. It comes right up to the plate, looking all fat and easy to belt, and then, just when you take your swing," Maniac got into the batter's stance and demonstrated, "it sort of stops, and your bat just whiffs the air." He whiffed at an imaginary stop ball. "Wow," said the brothers, gazing up at their big brother. And so Maniac was invited to accompany the brothers McNabb to their home. Despite the cold, the front door was wide open, and Maniac could smell the inside before he could see it. The first thing he did see was a yellow short-haired mongrel looking innocently up at him while taking a leak in the middle of the living room floor. "Clean that up," John ordered Russell. "Clean that up," Russell ordered Piper. Piper just walked on by. After crossing the front door, which was surprisingly heavy, Maniac found a stack of newspapers in a corner. He laid some of them on a bundle or on the puddle to soak in, then gave himself a tour of the downstairs. Maniac had seen some amazing things in his lifetime, but nothing as amazing as that house. From the smell of it, he knew this wasn't the first time an animal had relieved itself on the rugless floor. In fact, in another corner, he spotted a form of relief that could not be soaked up by a newspaper. Cans and bottles lay all over, along with crust, peelings, cores, scraps, rinds, wrappers, everything you would normally find in a garbage can. And everywhere, there were raisins. As he walked through the dining room, something, an old tennis ball, hit him on the top of the head and bounced away. He looked up into the laughing faces of Russell and Piper. The hole in the ceiling was so big they could have jumped through it at once. He ran a hand along one wall. The peeling paint came off like cornflakes. Nothing could be worse than the living and dining rooms. Yet the kitchen was. A jar of peanut butter had crashed to the floor. Someone had gotten a running start, jumped into it, and skied a brown, one-footed track to the stove. On the table were what appeared to be the remains of an autopsy performed upon a large bird, possibly a crow. The refrigerator contained two food groups, mustard and beer. The raisins here were even more abundant. He spotted several of them moving. They weren't raisins. They were roaches. The front door opened. Seconds later, a man clumped into the kitchen. He wore no winter jacket, only a sleeveless green sweatshirt, which ballooned over his enormous stomach. Tattoos blued his upper arms. His hands were nearly pure black. Stale body odor mingled with that of fries and burgers coming from the Burger King bag he held. Dropping the bag next to the bird remains, he bellowed, "Chow!" and took a beer from the fridge. He downed a good half of it in one swig, belched, double-clutched, and belched again. He had to know someone besides himself was standing in the kitchen, and, just as obviously, he didn't care. Two floor-quaking crashes came from the dining room. "Geronimo! Geronimo!" Russell and Piper had taken the direct route via the hole. "What you bring, Dad? Whoppers?" "Yeah, Whoppers!" They tore into the bag like jackals into carrion. Plastic flew, fries flew. They both wanted the same Whopper. Mashed between their tugging fists, the Whopper splurted sauce and cheese and pickle chips. Then it split. Russell lurched backward into the kitchen table with his half. Piper lurched backward in the opposite direction, and with nothing to stop him, sailed right through the cellar doorway and down the cellar steps. The final thud was followed by a truck horn blast of Piper's laughter. When Giant John ambled in, his father said, "Get the blocks?" "No," grunted John, pulling out a pair of Whoppers. He tossed one to Maniac. "We need more," growled the father. John didn't answer. "We need more." "I heard." McNabb smashed the tabletop. Three fries and a bird wing jumped to the floor. "Now!" John walked out, nonchalantly munching. "I was busy." The rest of the night was scenes from a loony movie. Scene. McNabb the father swaggers bare-armed out the front door, bellowing back, "Do your homework!" Scene. Maniac retrieves the wet newspaper from the living room. There are no wastebaskets in the house. He finds a trash can in the backyard next to a pile of cinder blocks. He dumps the soggy papers in the can, which is empty. Scene. Small turds of an unfamiliar shape appear here and there along the baseboards of the first floor. "Please don't be rats," Maniac prays. Scene. The cobras come in. They glare at Maniac, but Big John tells them to lay off. They raid the fridge for beer. They smoke cigarettes. They belch and fart. They curse. Russell and Piper, kitty cobras, pop their own beer cans, guzzle, swagger, belch, smoke, curse. Scene: football game, from the front of the living room to the back of the dining room. Except for space, it has everything a regular game has: running, passing, blocking, tackling, kicking. There is little furniture to get in the way. Ordinarily, the windows wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes, but the windows of this house are boarded up with plywood. Body-blocked cobras fly into the walls. The house flinches. Scene: a faint rustling noise behind the stove. Oh no, rats! Maniac dares to look. It's a turtle, box turtle, munching on an old Whopper lettuce. Whew! Scene: the boys' bedroom. Russell and Piper lay prone at the hole. They fired toy submachine guns, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, at the cobras heading out the front door. Piper jumps up and blows Maniac away, killing him at least 15 times. This is how we're going to do it. Bam, bam, bam. The guns will be real, said Russell, still prone and firing, the stock of the toy gun tight against his cheek. Yeah, squawks Piper, real. He flops back to the floor, sprays the hole downstairs. Soon's they start coming in, bam, bam, bam. Who, says Maniac. The enemy, says Russell. Who's that, says Maniac. Russell stops firing long enough to send Maniac a where have you been look. What do you think, he sneers. He points the red barrel of some machine gun toward the bedroom door. Towards the east. The east end. The heavy front door. Scene: darkness, silence. Sometime early morning, Maniac lies between the two brothers on the bed. Do cockroaches climb bedpost? Unable to sleep, asking himself, what am I doing here? Remembering Hester and Lester on his lap, Grayson's hug, corn muffins in the toaster oven, thinking, who's the orphan here anyway? Hearing as he at last lowers himself into sleep's deep waters, a door slam, a slurred voice, do your homework. Fearing, will I float? All right, I hope you enjoyed today's reading. I know there was some pretty powerful moments in there. Again, I really hope you are enjoying this story. Until next time, peace.